performance by Cliff Lee.
Victorino in the alley calling. He's got it! And the Phillies are going back to the World Series!
Welcome to Continued Success. I am Justin Clue of FanGraphs and Baseball Prospectus. With me is Liz Rocher of Yahoo Sports. Good morning, Liz.
Good morning, Justin.
We are firing on all cylinders, as you can already tell, and everything's good to go. So no question there. Why even bring it up, Justin? Great point. So basically, yeah, we got some baseball things to discuss, which should be a surprise to anyone who listens to this podcast on a regular basis. You guys never talk about baseball stuff. Well, today we're gonna open that door and go down that road. Basically, because this off season is continuing. We tried to skip it last week by not doing a continued success, and it went on anyway. So we're all out of ideas, and now we're just kind of at the point we've circled back and got to keep talking about it. Maybe then it'll go away. So, Liz, you know, it's been a pretty, obviously we know what stories have dominated the news cycle this winter. And at this point, what do you make of the state of baseball's cheating scandal? I mean, we've got all the teams that suffered, quote unquote, any kind of repercussions are starting to repair themselves. We're seeing managers be replaced and interviews be held, and you know, the fallout of that is being addressed, and that's kind of the state we're in. And the Astros hired Dusty Baker, which, before we get too far into that, I mean, let's just talk about that. Baker was one of the guys that was among the triumvirate of veteran managers with good reputations that the Phillies were interested in hiring at the beginning of the offseason. Talking about, of course, Joe Girardi, Buck Showalter, and Dusty Baker. Baker's name has been brought up in regards to a couple of different managerial openings across baseball. And, you know, now it was this one, the one in Houston, that was created when the Astros fired A.J. Hinch along with their GM, Jeff Lanau, in response to a baseball's investigation into their cheating scandal. I believe they were suspended a year, and then Jim Crane fired both of them anyway, the owner of the Astros. That created an opening into which the Astros had a choice, Liz. They had to bring in somebody who would not only be the kind of manager they wanted to have, but also somebody that PR'd well, somebody that looked to the public like, oh, you know, this is a, we're bringing in somebody, you know, who is good, and this is like, this is we're what is rebranding, well, we're repairing our image, you know. So it had to be that as well. And frankly, this was the move I kind of saw them making. This is, you know, Dusty Baker is recognizable. Pretty much everybody, you know, the complaint against Dusty is that he overuses pitchers too much. He's too old school. He's not new school enough, which anything at this point in baseball history, you should be glad your coach isn't quote unquote new school enough. We can see how easily that becomes just as bad a thing as a guy being like, my gut has all the answers. And in fact, I'd probably trust that more than I would, tech bros trying to out-manipulate each other from opposing monitor rooms. So, this is where we're at. This is the state of the scandal, and now Dusty Baker's in Houston. So, what do you like about this move? Anything?
I mean, when you have a problem, you've got to bring in the doctor. You do. I mean, that's what Dusty Baker is. If you followed any of his press conference yesterday, he was just like throwing out one-liners like he was doing his 5-minute set at the Copa. You know, he was talking about like Eric Clapton and Muddy Waters. he's talking about the rappers he's listening to. Like it was something.
He dropped a reference to his own album, didn't he?
He might have. Like he might be. I don't know how we live without him for so long. I don't, because he's a classic old school baseball guy like we don't have. He's different than Buck Showalter. He's better. I'll say it. I think he's better. I'm glad they hired Dusty Baker. I know he's mostly just a shield to be there for 1 year while they figure out what's next. But, you know, they hired someone that I think should have been hired by at least one other team, if not several. So I'm glad that he's back.
when the dust settled and it was clear, you know, Girardi had the Phillies job, but those other two guys weren't really getting a manager job. It was like, oh yeah, you kind of forgot about it, especially in Baker's case. He was the manager of the Giants from 1993 to 2002. And then he was the manager of the Cubs for 4 years, from 03 to 06. Took a job with the Reds from 08 to 2013. And then managed 2 years with the Nationals, 2016 and 2017.
He was fired twice after taking his team to the playoffs.
Yeah.
He was fired by the Giants after taking them to the World Series in 2002. And then by the Nationals in 2017. Like, that's something. And it was at least the first time it was the Giants didn't renew his contract. And he'd been there for quite a while. But, you know, the Nationals is still baffling.
Yeah, and that's another part of his reputation, is lack of playoff success in those 22 years of managing. Which, by the way, if you drop out 2007, as well as the years between his Reds and Nationals days, 2014 and 2015, that's only 3 years out of a 25-year period where he wasn't managing a Major League Baseball team. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty consistent work for a job that we've debated the merits of, the purpose of, the role of. Clearly, he made enough of an impact to get consistent managing work over the course of 25 years. So that's pretty impressive, I would say.
Well, you look at a guy like Gabe Kapler and you wonder what he brings. You look at a guy like Dusty Baker and, like, you know what he brings to the table. He's definitely player first. He challenges his players, but he protects them. Like, I'm so jealous. Like, I love Joe Girardi, don't get me wrong, but, like, I really wanted the Phillies to hire Dusty Baker, even for a short time, because he's a legend. You want him throwing out quips behind the podium with your logo on it.
Do you think that there's anything to the idea that Dusty Baker lacks playoff success? I mean, I probably look at that more. You know, there's a lot of luck that goes into that. I don't know. I feel like he's fully capable of winning in the playoffs. We just haven't seen it yet, I guess. But you look at his long managing career, and there's only one NL pennant, and you're just like, huh, wow, that's a lot of years he's worked and not had a team that could you know, go deep in the playoffs. So is that a criticism worth even mentioning at this point for the Astros?
I think it's a criticism worth mentioning as part of other, you know, as part of other things, because his lack of playoff success, I think, comes from his mismanagement of pitching. That's really kind of his signatures. You know, the overusing pitchers isn't something he's really allowed to do anymore. Mm-hmm. No organization's going to let him do that. But the mismanagement issue is one that I remember a lot of. I remember seeing that when he was with the Reds, which is when I was really paying attention closely to baseball. And that was one of his big problems. So, you know, maybe it's that's the culprit. But, you know, your team is your team. I mean, this year, the Astros are most likely going to make the playoffs again. That is going to be partially because of Dusty, but they also did it last year with a different guy, and the year before that, too. So playoff success isn't always within a manager's grasp, you know? It's not something he can always affect himself.
Yes. So, I mean, you've talked about how much you like Dusty Baker and how good it is to see him in baseball again. I mean, he called joining the Astros, he says, this is a new beginning. You know, this isn't the first, you know, version of this that we've seen. This scandal is very young, this cheating scandal that's starting with the Astros and probably expands to other franchises. But there's been a very big rush on the case of, you know, some members of the media, certainly on the case of the Astros, to get past this. They know they're not going to be forgiven quickly, so their only hope is that we forget quickly, and we know we are fully capable of forgetting things very, very quickly in baseball. There was one writer for Mass Live who was talking about Alex Cora leaving the Red Sox for his involvement in this, and he actually wrote, like, oh yeah, no, Alex Cora will be remembered for, like, that time he went into the stands and like helped a fan and, like, introduced that fan to their favorite player and got a bunch of autographs. So he's like, this is what people will remember about Alex Cora. And it's like, no, it won't. No, it will not. And I know Dusty Baker's just you know, he's just said this is a new beginning, referring to himself. I don't know how much he's saying to about like the Astros and about turning the page on this shameful chapter of their history, but like, you know, this is the obviously the quote that gets highlighted by MLB.com, which, you know, has its own reasons for wanting you to be like, okay, that's over, we're moving on. How much does that is that signified by hiring Dusty Baker specifically, and how much do the Astros deserve to move on this early in the process?
I mean, they had to hire someone.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in hiring Dusty, I don't think, you know, I don't think they can't distract. They can't do anything more than what they're doing to make people forget. People aren't going to forget. For a while, people just aren't. And they're going to, that's what they want. They want people to move on. And I think because it's so new, people aren't going to. I think Dodgers fans aren't going to let people forget for a long, long time. I hope they stay angry and they keep the rest of us angry. At least the baseball community that we tend to run in loves to make fun of things. And this Astros thing is going to be easy to mock for a long, long time, which is great.
Yeah, I know. I totally agree. But this
hiring Dusty is nice and it distracts people for a little while, but everyone's going to get cheating questions forever. So
I more or less look at this like it's the only move they really could have made. If they had hired somebody, I mean, Lord knows, if they had hired somebody from in-house, that would have been a disaster.
Oh, they could not. They couldn't.
They had to hire Dusty. Like, he's from outside the organization. He has the reputation he has. It changes things. It turns the page for them, which is exactly, I think, what he means when he says this is a new beginning. You know, this is his fifth team he's managing. But the Astros are in need of any sort of empathy, sympathy, humanization, I guess. And, mm-hmm. and Dusty Baker's a pretty human guy. So, yeah, I feel like there's not really a move they could have made outside of this one that would have been viewed as any kind of right move. But in a way, it almost feels like the balance of this, it's not like, oh, the Astros hired Dusty Baker and he tilts them a little more towards respectable being who he is. Honestly, to me, this thing is so big that it's almost like the tentacles of the Astros scandal reached out and pulled Dusty Baker back in. And I don't know if you know, it's not going to be him alone that can do this. We're at the point where, like, bringing this up with the players, it'll be considered like rude and bad form soon. You know, like they'll be talking about something else and be like, hi, you know, was this did you guys cheat tonight? Or, like, you know, we heard banging tonight at Minute Maid Park. Like, was there some kind of cheat? And they'll be like, oh, like, stupid question. That's so rude. Oh, blah, blah, and look down upon. But, like, no, like, this is the fallout of having a reputation like this, is you're going to be asked questions like that repeatedly.
Yeah,
and I know it's going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, eventually the reporters will stop. You know, once everyone gathers for spring training, the Astros players are going to finally address it. That's a signal for the media to stop asking specific questions about it, unless there are things that they left unanswered, which I'm sure there will be. But at some point, the media will stop asking because they have to. They follow these guys as they, you know, hop the country to play baseball games every day. They have to live and work with them. And the Astros are already pretty unfriendly to, the press. So they're eventually going to stop asking, but that's not who they have to, you know, they might see that as sort of like a big step towards moving on, is when the media finally stops asking questions, but that doesn't mean the fans will stop remembering.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Phillies fans have booed Ryan Braun forever. I don't even remember why. J.D. Drew was booed for his entire career.
Yes.
And he was over in the AL. And so I really think that, I mean, this is going to last for a long time, because it's not just like one team that's super angry. Everyone knows that the Astros cheated, and wherever they go, they're going to hear it. They're going to hear it from everyone. So, I mean, the Astros can see, like, oh, the media's finally stopped asking. Yes, we can all move on with our lives. But fans, it takes a long time for them to forget. A really long time for them to forget. So we'll see what happens. Like, there are other AL teams that are going to be angry. I can't wait to see the reception that the Astros get when they go to other places. I think they start opening day, they're visiting another team, which is awesome. Start your MLB season by being booed into oblivion.
Yeah, I'm very curious to see what the on-field reception is to the Astros too. Following this. That'll be because there's, you know, you've seen players' reactions already, and you know, some of them are negative. Some players have been silent, but yeah, you definitely there's going to be a different version of this when baseball actually starts playing. So I'm very curious to see how that goes. I'm very curious to see what further moves await us in this offseason, because, you know, you look up in New York, and obviously we know Carlos Beltran stepped down from his new position with the Mets and was replaced by Luis Rojas because of the fallout from this scandal. We're talking about Dusty Baker taking the role of A.J. Hinch, and there's still another team that needs to hire a manager. So, like, where do the Red Sox go at this point? They Alex Cora is no longer their manager. And they've got to fill that void as well. So this isn't really even over. So what's the Red Sox move with the best PR managing hire off the market?
I have no idea. I really don't. I don't know what they're doing. I don't know why they've taken so long. Maybe they felt like they had to wait for the Astros to hire their manager first, because they, you know, parted ways with, quote unquote, Alex Cora not long after that. The initial Astros report came out, but their report hasn't been released. So maybe they feel like they have to wait to hire someone new. Maybe they just haven't found anyone. I don't know who they go to. I don't know who they go to now. I feel like Buck Showalter is probably it.
Really?
Who else is out there?
Well, they said
someone?
They were looking at Mark Kotze and Jason Veritek as their in-house option.
Sammy
Veritek. Oh, yeah.
Just actually hire Veritek. It's what he's wanted for so long.
That's honestly, when I heard that mentioned, I was like, oh, that's the guy. Like, that's their great move, because he's, you know, not involved, but obviously deeply invested in the Red Sox franchise. And he's like, you know, he's from them. So that would make a lot of sense, I feel like, especially if it's just if it's not viewed as a long term hire, which you're saying Dusty Baker, you don't think he is. You think you said he probably a 1 year hire.
I think until they figure out. Yeah, it's just a 1 year contract he's on. They could potentially extend it, but I don't see them doing it. I think unless for some reason Dusty is the most popular and successful manager they've ever had. I think they want to hire someone else, because they have to hire a new GM, and that guy's going to want his own manager.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true, too. Yeah. So, a lot more shifting involved, thanks to this cheating scandal that erupted here in baseball's offseason. I mean, how do you view the Astros at this point? Like, do you think skill-wise, I've seen a lot of Astros fans trying to comfort themselves in a lot of ways. Some people have turned to trying to trash Mike Fiers, the guy who started this by outing the Astros as far as their the technological cheating camera usage that they were getting criticized for, that kind of started all this. I've seen people try to trash him, say like, oh, well, he's no hero. Why did he do this? Why didn't he speak up at the time? Blah, blah, blah.
Why didn't anybody else speak up at the time? Cram it.
Sure. Sure.
Not you.
I mean,
those imaginary people.
Fine, I'll cram it.
No, it's just frustrating. Like, fans have such a different perception of Fiers than baseball players do. Because when he was introduced at A's Fest, you know, the Athletics big, you know, winter festival, he was greeted with cheers, loud, loud cheers the entire time. So he's a hero to, you know, other people who, you know, give a shit about baseball and its integrity. The integrity. But he is a hero to people who give a shit about cheating in baseball. To baseball players who were annoyed that he spoke out of turn, they're not going to like him. But,
boo-hoo.
You know, who cares?
Yeah, I mean, this is where we're at now. And, Astros fans have obviously been eager to comfort themselves. You know, you're not wrong to be an Astros fan or to continue being an Astros fan. this certainly changes perspective, and it's something that probably should be talked about and is front of mind if you're an Astros fan. But the, you know, you don't have to. You didn't do anything. If you're an Astros fan, you are not a cheater as far as, you know, Major League Baseball goes. So, but there's been a really instinctive defensive mechanism in place for some Astros fans, and one of the things I'm starting to see is that they say, okay, yeah, we cheated and we're facing the repercussions of that, but we're still, you know, the best team in baseball. So I think a piece went up on Baseball Prospectus a couple days ago about what if the Astros win the World Series in 2020? I mean, it's definitely a possibility, even if they aren't cheating. I mean, this was by Matt Sussman at Baseball Prospectus. And I don't know, it makes you wonder. I mean, like, hey, Liz, is this team good enough to be a contender even without technological advancements? And what happens if they win the World Series this year?
Well, they'll consider it to be the biggest comeback story of all time.
Oh,
the rest
God.
Of us will be. I mean, right? You see it like cheating, angry people.
The league
them.
Tried to kick us to the curb, and we won anyway.
It's the biggest fuck you to everyone who hates them, because they would have done it under incredible scrutiny and almost certainly without cheating. They did it in 2019 without cheating, ostensibly. So, you know, they're still good enough to do this. I mean, without Gerrit Cole, like, they've got a problem, because they have a big hole where Gerrit Cole used to be, and they don't have anyone to fill it, I don't think, yet. But that's, like, not even the biggest problem they have is just getting over all of this. Like, the talent level is still there. They still have an exceptionally talented team that's going to run the table in the AL West. So,
yeah. No, I agree.
I really don't want them to win. Like, I want Dusty to win a World Series so much. I don't want the Astros to win the World Series, because that is the type of fuck you comeback story that we don't need.
They're a very formidable team that I cannot. Yes, I totally agree that's the narrative. They'll be like, we succeeded despite the league trying to take us down, and skipping over the part where you guys did this to yourselves.
Exactly. I mean, and I can't wait to their apologies. I can't wait to see what their apologies are going to be, because it's all going to be like, the PR people that Jim Crane is hiring, I'm going to guess they're very, very expensive and talented. I can't wait to see what these players are going to say and how they're going to expect to be taken seriously when it's pretty clear that none of them are sorry.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Like, they have to apologize, but none of them are sorry. None of them are sorry for what they did. And I wonder if they think, well, now we've apologized, the end.
They definitely, that is what they think.
Yep.
Yes.
They're going to be sadly mistaken. Like, they've embarrassed, like, you could tell that the commissioner works for the owners, because this was an incredibly embarrassing situation that lasted months. And it started with the Taubman thing, because the culture on their team is so bad that it leaked out. One of them was so unhinged that it just sort of spurted out of one of the little holes in the organization, and then everyone saw what it was about. Like, that's how it started. The cheating stuff came later, but it was equally bad. They embarrassed the league for the entire season, for the entire offseason, and they got off comparably light.
Oh my God, so light, so light.
Like, two dudes who had nothing to do with it lost their jobs. And yes, I mean, it's important in a union for you to protect your members. And that's what the Astros are. They deserve to have a union to make a deal for them, even if I don't agree with it and believe they should have been punished. But, you know, I was talking to my husband about this, about the larger issue behind it, which is, They're heading into CBA negotiations. It expires at the end of 2021 for the collective bargaining agreement. And the Astros have created a huge amount of dissension amongst players. Like, yeah, they've created a major issue within just the rank and file of their union. And because they didn't get punished, that needs to be reckoned with. I don't know how they're going to do that or if they're going to do that. Tony Clark, no matter what, is still a former baseball player and not a former union boss. He's not a lawyer. You know, he does have someone on staff who can do this now, but I don't know how much control that guy has. So that's something that has to be figured out. You know, this could be a big issue moving into the CBA among players. It's disappointing that the Astros players have shown so little remorse, and I'm going to guess will continue to show so little remorse, because I'm going to guess even what they say to the public isn't going to be enough for fellow players.
Yeah, no, I think that's accurate. They, as has already happened this year on social media, players are calling each other out. There's going to be accusations thrown moving forward, even in non-Astros situations, but just the idea of people cheating in the capacity that the Astros are said to have cheated, knowing that that's out there, it's like, oh yeah, okay, so what really happened here? And things get re-examined and suspicions are raised. And, you know, when we talk about the integrity of the game, that's essentially what one of the things we're talking about is that you kind of kick the bases out from under baseball, and suddenly all we're talking about is, okay, that was like something crazy that happened on the field. What shady thing is this the result of? Not what beautiful baseball moment this was. And the Astros have created that. Sure, they're not, maybe they weren't the only team that was cheating, but they were a team that was cheating, and they got caught first. You know, they didn't get caught. They got busted. They got outed first. So, yeah, it's created a whole new view of the sport, I would say. And, that's very eager to see how exactly this affects the on-field product moving forward, because it's going to. All right. Well, with that being said, we're going to hit our first break here, come back and talk a little more about what's going on in the general baseball scene right after this. Well, Liz, we're talking about players on the move. No, we weren't. I was trying to transition into something else, and, my brain just never got there. So we were talking about the Astros, and we were talking about, oh, I know how to do this. We were talking about the Astros. We kind of talked a little bit about the Red Sox, basically all the fallout from those cheating scandals. But up in Boston, there's another topic on people's minds, and that's the concept of Mookie Betts being traded from Boston, despite him being obviously one of the most popular players on the team among fans, being one of the best players, in baseball right now. It's one of those deals you're like, why is the team doing this? And I've seen a lot of lamenting on Twitter from Red Sox fans and Red Sox writers and bloggers just being like, oh my God, like, why are we going through this? Why is this what we're talking about? So I don't know, Liz, I mean, can you lay this out for why exactly Mookie Betts would be moved from Boston to a team like right now it's the Dodgers who are most talked about making a deal for him?
Because owner John Henry wants to buy a new yacht.
Interesting.
Or whatever else it is he wants to do. He wants to cut payroll, essentially. And Mookie Betts is perfect because he's going to hit free agency within the next 1 to 2 years. He does not want to pay him. And he doesn't want to pay him now. And because of that, he would rather trade him and get prospects back. It's the same thing. It's the same reason why the Cubs are looking to trade Chris Bryant. It's not for baseball reasons. It's purely for money. And as disappointing as this is, like, for the teams, for the fans of teams that are trying to trade these stars, they should be angry and upset. The rest of baseball should be happy. Because these are players that would, in a better world, in a different world, be locked up and not able, you know, not free to go to another team, and they're both excellent. You know, in this world that we're in, the, you know, nonsensical greed of John Henry is going to be the gain of another team. Unfortunately, it'll probably be the Dodgers, which don't need, they've already had enough, but.
Isn't that incredible that the Dodgers, the Dodgers will be fine without Mookie Betts. They missed on like Garrett Cole, so that could have been where their over-the-top talent came from. But with Mookie Betts at like the top of their lineup, I mean, that's cheat codes. Like, I guess I probably shouldn't throw the word cheat out there in a cavalier way at this point, but you know what I mean? Like, that's absurd. And that kind of almost ends the NL West conversation. And that's probably why, the Padres might be, who are another team that rumored to be in on Mookie Betts dealings. Dodgers have have plenty of prospects to offer. The Padres have obviously a fruitful
even
farm
more.
System. But I feel like the Padres might be a little like the Dodgers can trade talent and have talent for days at the major league level. The Padres aren't quite there yet in that regard. So I don't know. I feel like the Dodgers can – they just have the influence. They have the big looming shadow that could kick the Padres out of the way and just kind of like grab Mookie Betts because they want him. But you're right. I mean,
they'd
again,
have
this
to trade
is...
Gavin Lux. They'd have to trade yeah. one of their best prospects for him. But I feel like they're willing to do that because they want a World Series so bad.
I mean, is this not exactly what a GM's job is, to kind of look a little bit into the future and see like, all right, look, we don't want to, you know, or we at least are going to investigate the possibility of not having to pay this this player. I mean, Mookie Betts is 26. He's received a form of MVP votes every year since he was 22. He's been an All-Star last 4 years. He was the MVP in 2018. He was the MVP runner-up in 2016. Obviously, this is a guy you want on your team, but if you're the Red Sox GM and you're looking at your roster and you're looking at your books and you're just like, all right, this is what we want room for, this is what we have room for, you know, the reality of that is what it is, but this is what the owner is telling me we have room for. I'm going to get a little creative here and think about trading this beloved player who is going to be very expensive and try to use him to gain, you know, some high level prospects like Gavin, young players like Gavin Lux, and sort of try and solidify the future while we still have a little talent here in the present. I mean, is that not what the GM's job is as well? Just to see like the other side of it.
It is, absolutely. You know, the complaints of Red Sox fans is that they appear to be tearing down when they don't have to.
Yes.
They could have held on. They could have held on to Mookie for a little bit longer. He would have been worth less and, you know, gotten fewer prospects back. But that would have meant that the Red Sox could have actually competed. Though, you know, you look at the Red Sox and they're cheating in 2018 and then look at 2019 when they didn't do it. That's a much different team. It's a team that looked a lot different, and there are a lot of reasons why they were different, but the Red Sox are one case where you have to wonder how much the cheating really did affect them.
Yeah.
Because they sort of came out of the woodwork in 2018 and then disappeared right after. So fans are upset about the teardown, but this is exactly what a GM's job is. You know, it's disappointing for the Red Sox. It appears that their owner is like, I want more money. We need to cut payroll. This is not sustainable, instead of investing more money to become better. But this is baseball has always been this way. You know, I think we all just sort of have more now than ever have the words and the concepts to complain about it in a substantive way than, you know, just the fist shaking and, you know, angry stomping that we used to do.
I think it just sucks because it becomes obvious when a team is making business decisions and not baseball decisions.
Yeah.
As a fan, you're just like, this is the kind of stuff I would dread when I was a little kid and I kind of got in my head, though, like, oh, okay, any player can disappear from your team at any time. That was less aggressively so when I was growing up, but now it seems, you know, pretty par for the course that a player like Mookie, who is like, oh, this is this incredible player, he's going to help us be good, and then a GM looks at that a little differently and it's just like, okay, well, what, you know, he's going to be worth this much, he could be worth less, what if we got to capitalize on his value now because his deal's running out at this time, blah blah blah. And it's tough to be, I don't know, I mean, there's people who, this is the part of baseball they talk about, and they love to talk about this, like, this is their fandom. That's not me. I would prefer if a team that I followed had a talent like Mookie, they were locking him up and not thinking, what could we get for him? Yeah, that sucks. That all sucks. So it also sucks to make the Dodgers that much better, especially given the anecdotal evidence we had of the Phillies last year from Ken Rosenthal being too intimidated by the Dodgers to compete. I wonder if this makes that any more appealing.
Probably not.
Mm.
I feel bad for the Dodgers. You know, they hit the, you know, they hit the buzzsaw twice in a row, and I would kind of like them to win the World Series.
Interesting.
I do. I have no problem with the Dodgers. Like, when the Phillies are playing them, I hate them. But most of the time, they're, you know, a fun team that doesn't act. You know, they're a fun team that's good, and they don't act like the Astros do. You know, the Astros are very much, even before this, even before the whole cheating thing, they were very, you know, nobody likes us, we don't care. I hate using that phrase, but they were very brash and open with how good they are, which is fine. They're allowed to be because they're really good baseball players, but the Dodgers definitely sort of just went about their business and won a bunch of games and shut up about it.
Yeah.
Which, considering that I hate the Astros anyway, I would rather them just shut up so I can pretend they don't exist most of the time.
Yeah, no, I think at this point the Dodgers probably have more, I don't want to say pity, but like that is
sympathy.
Essentially what it is. They are a World Series winning caliber team that just didn't, they have everything but the trophy essentially. And then to have this come out and have the reason for that being, oh, well, you know, the other team was cheating. I mean, boy, that's gotta be a little frustrating.
Yeah, very much so.
So I can't say I necessarily feel bad for the Dodgers, but I certainly get the anger and the frustration. I think we all have at least a little bit of that around baseball and around cheating going into 2020. And, you know, if the Dodgers are your way into that, that makes total sense. So Liz, just to pivot here to the NL East, you know, focus away from the bigger, dumber baseball conversations, focus on the smaller, dumber Phillies conversations. MLB.com, Mark Bauman recently put together a list of the NL East outfields. It was sort of a ranking system. It basically just specified who he believed the best one was, and then the others, I think, were just listed in alphabetical order. I'm not sure if they were really considered. If they were ranked in the order he saw them being good, then the Phillies were last, which it would be an interesting pick. I don't think these are rankings. I think he just specified the one he felt was best and then listed the other four. Now he's a Braves beat writer, keep in mind. So I don't know what that means. Obviously there's a team he knows better than others, but he's also, you know, general writer for MLB.com, but he did pick the Braves as the best outfield in the NL East, and I don't think that's wrong, frankly. I mean, you know, you're looking at Ronald Acuna out there. Ender Inciarte is a three-time Gold Glove winner, assuming that he can stay on the field. They acquired Marcell Ozuna late this offseason. I kind of feel like that's probably it. I mean, where are you on the outlook of outfields in the NL East?
I got an alert about, you know, this is what the NL East outfields look like on my MLB app recently. It had finally, after months, stopped sending me notifications, which was great. And then I accidentally opened it and it sent me like four or five alerts in a 2-hour span, and all of them were bullshit. Like, here's what the NL East, you know, outfields look like, and I almost threw it out of a window.
Breaking news: the Phillies could bring any of these non-roster invitees to spring training.
I mean, I think the state of the outfields, I mean, I mostly agree with you. I think I just can't. I need the Phillies to start playing games to make me feel better.
Yeah,
that's really what it is. People talk about being very hopeful. I have a hard time. Like, I'm everyone's favorite Phillies podcaster these days because I cannot stop being negative about the team. I think
it's just you. Everyone else is a fucking cheerleader for this team.
I know.
It's been positive vibes nonstop around everything. It's just you
it
who
is
are
just
negative
me.
About
and
this
as,
Philadelphia sports
as
team.
As everyone tells me, it's just me and everyone hates it. But I really just need them to start playing games to make me feel better about everything. You know, I think their outfield is fine. I think it could do great despite not necessarily having stability there still. You know, with Scott Kingery and, oh God, what's his face? Adam Heasley.
Go on.
I know these
guys.
Go on. This is my team. I know this. This is, stop it. Shut up. Adam Heasley. That's a guy. You know.
Yeah, when I think about Phillies outfielders, the first one to come to mind is certainly Adam Heasley. No one else out there.
No, but like
with a high profile.
Bryce Harper is great. You know, Andrew McCutchen will eventually be back. You know, it could be great, but I just need them to start playing games to reassure me, because I am going to have a hard time believing this team is measurably better than they were last year, even with the addition of Zach Wheeler.
Right.
You know, I will have a hard time believing this team is measurably better and is better equipped to win games than they were last year. I have to see it before I believe it. I just don't have it in me. I've been kicked in the ass by this team for like a decade now.
Well, I think, and this is to your point, I think that this is all based on exactly what you're talking about. Proof, you know, established skill. And when you're looking through the outfields of the NL East, you're looking at a bunch of teams that, you know, okay, this could be good, but have some questions. And in the Braves' case, they're like, well, we have Inciarte, who's proven that he's a great outfielder. Acuna has proven he's potentially an iconic outfielder. And Ozuna, who's like a big pickup off the free agent market. So these are guys who have reputations, who have, you know, in some cases played together already. They are good. Like, we know this. Whereas with the Phillies, it's like, okay, so assuming Bryce Harper stays productive, assuming Adam Haseley takes to the reps, he's going to get in center field as well as we're hoping. Assuming Roman Quinn can stay healthy. Why would you assume that? Assuming Jay Bruce is effective in a corner outfield spot. Assuming Odubel Herrera is dealt with in a frank and efficient manner, assuming Nick Martini and Nick Williams fill the roles they're going to fill, which hopefully are minimal, assuming, and this is the big one, Andrew McCutchen comes back from a devastating season-ending injury and is able to be the kind of leadoff hitter he was before he went down. That's a lot of assumptions.
Yeah,
it's a lot of questions. A lot. So you're not going to get the Phillies listed as the best outfield. Even if they have good players, which they do, but there's too many questions around them. Because the same thing goes for the Marlins. Brian Anderson is a great player, but he's young and got hurt last year. Lewis Brinson was a top prospect, but he hasn't proven anything at the major league level. You're hoping that this is a year where he gets to do that. And then they signed Corey Dickerson, who was really good for the Phillies last year. So, like, there's some more talent there than you probably think, but it's, again, got a lot of questions around it. The Nationals
but
a little less so.
But the expectations, the expectations for the Marlins and Phillies are different. They might have the same amount of questions, but you're going to expect the Phillies to be better because, and the Marlins could be, you know, they could just be middling and it would still be considered a win.
Right.
Anyway,
which
so
is, I think, what, that's essentially what they're going for. Yeah. And yeah, I was just going to say the Nationals have Juan Soto. He answers a lot of questions in the outfield, and he's why, you know, they're kind of behind the Braves pretty closely. Same with Victor Robles out there. His defense is incredible. And I actually wrote about going into the playoffs how having those two guys in the outfield could really be the difference, Robles especially, that could put the Nationals over the top. And look at that. I called that perfectly. So, yay. But, yeah, and Adam Eaton is their other guy. And, you know, they mentioned Bowman mentions he had a solid second half leading up to the World Series. So he's not really, you know, he's not the centerpiece out there. But, you know, it's the same with the Mets. Their outfield kind of depends on Yoenis Cespedes coming back from his fractured ankle in an effective way. So I think that's what you're looking at here, stability. The Braves have the most stable and talented outfield in the NL East, and I don't think that's necessarily even a tough question to answer. So, yeah, I mean, that's what we've said about the Phillies, that, like, at this point, I think in 2018, it's fair, like, at the end of 2017, I think that was whatever the year was that ended with Nick Williams hitting that inside the park home run. The vibe around the team kind of changed. Gabe Kapler was new, and we didn't really know what he was going to bring, but that it would be different than any Phillies team we'd seen before. There were all these young players. There was, you know, they scooped up Jake Arrieta just because they wanted to, and it was just like, all right, cool. This team is potentially good again, and then they looked good, and then they you know, fell out of it. And then 2019, they signed Bryce Harper, and it's you know, JT Realmuto comes in. It's like, all right, this is a great team. This is a playoff team. And then they again blow it in the second half, just didn't have the depth and suffered a ton of injuries. And I think we just thought we'd be farther along in this process by now. We'd be talking about a team that was going to be building off some minor playoff success, at least, and trying to go, you know, all the way. But we're still talking about the current Phillies cracking the postseason for the first time. And it comes down to this team just still has a lot of questions, and we thought we would have more answers than questions by now. And the outfield is just kind of a microcosm of that. Excellent. Well...
I was trying to think of something to say, but like you said it all pretty well.
Excellent. That's why we're so good at having two people.
I was just
in this
like
podcast.
Sitting like, huh. No, I if you'd like, I'll walk you through my thought process because I'm listening to you say those things and like, good idea, excellent, I agree. And then you're like, you ended your sentence, and I'm still thinking, yes, I agree with this. I'm like, oh nope, now no one's talking.
People love that on podcasts.
Yeah, sorry,
silence.
Everyone.
Tune into Philly's Silence next up on the Good Fight Podcast family.
If I stopped talking, would we get more listeners? Who knows?
We just need some. We need some. Finally, someone to be a little more positive. No one is too up on this team right now, Liz, and you're tearing the rest of us down.
I know.
Frankly.
I'm the worst.
Well, we'll take a quick break here and finish things up on continued success. We'll be back right after this. Well, Liz, you know, it's been a shifting landscape for MLB culturally, personnel wise. I guess they're still using bats, but there was some some rule changes, I think, at one point. A lot of stuff gets shifted to the back burner with this with the cheating scandal kind of dominating the news. Like I said, I forgot Joe Girardi was the Phillies manager for a second, and I really forgot Cole Hamels had been signed by the Braves. So that sucked to open a tweet with a picture of him wearing a Braves jersey in it. Forgot about that entirely. So I think there's been a lot of stuff that just hasn't been in focus that probably would have been in an off season where the Astros hadn't banged on a trash can. So, I mean, just to start, Liz, what is a story that recently popped into your mind that you were like, oh, right, that happened. It's kind of a big deal, and I've completely forgotten about it.
For me, it was Cole Hamels. It was right when you mentioned it. I wish I could say something that you hadn't mentioned, but it really was that, because as soon as I saw that video of him still being so handsome, why? In that Braves uniform, that ugly, terrible, offensive Braves uniform, I was just like, why did I have to remember that this happened? I mean, you think of this team with Cole Hamels on it, and yeah, they're over the luxury tax, but I'm doing a lot less complaining because there's a rotation there that I can trust, mm-hmm. at least, because it's Aaron Nola, Zach Wheeler, and Cole Hamels in it, and those are at least one guy, Cole Hamels, that you know is probably going to come out and be relatively what we know he is. You know, and Wheeler will most likely be the same, and we can hope that Aaron Nola will get back to where he is. Like, that's a rotation I could trust. One move
yeah.
could have changed how I felt about the entire Phillies offseason and the entire team. But the fact that they didn't get a second starter, you know, they didn't sign another starting pitcher this year after Zach Wheeler and just said, yeah, it's fine. We could just shuffle those guys that we all know and hate in the back end again. It's personally offensive to me, actually. And remembering it every time makes me angry anew. And I hadn't thought about it in over a month.
Well, I think it would have shifted the balance. I think we would have looked at the rotation and seen three pitchers that we know could potentially get the job done.
Yeah.
Whereas in this case, getting Wheeler gives you Nola and Wheeler at the top, fine. But then it's still kind of a mess behind him. Like, we can talk about who has promise and who could really turn things around. And we've talked many times about how Eflin finished strong in 2019. Jake Arrieta is going to be nothing. I don't think anybody has particularly high expectations for anybody else from in-house that the Phillies could put into that number five spot. It doesn't mean success is unattainable. It just means haven't attained it. And it's been, you know, 3-4 years at this point. So why are we still leaning on this? And if the Phillies want to believe in that and that's going to be their rotation and that'll work out and then it does, cool. But I mean, can you imagine what the fallout's going to be if the Phillies rotation is a weak point yet again, even if Nola and Wheeler are effective and we're looking at Cole Hamels pitching in a Braves uniform all year? I mean,
I personally will never shut up about it.
And he was willing to come. He wanted to come here. It's kind of bad. You kind of can't think about it because it is kind of, it's more frustrating. It's not like Cole Hamels is prime Cole Hamels anymore. Certainly he got beat up a little bit, leaving Philadelphia. I think when he was with the Cubs,
the Rangers. He was with the Rangers first, but
he was better when he was with the Cubs.
Well,
yeah, he kind of
bounced
back.
But that's because that park, Globe Life, he was not great in that park. If you look at his splits for the time while he was with the Rangers, he's better outside of Globe Life than he was inside of it. And as soon as I saw that, I'm like, the Phillies should get him back. Because once he gets into a park that's not like that, he's going to be great. And then he went to the Cubs, and he was great. He got injured for the first time in a long time, I think. And, you know, spent some time on the DL in his first season there. But, yeah, I mean, from what I recall, the Phillies offered him several million dollars less than what he was given by the Braves.
It was like significantly.
It was a significantly low ball offer, and it made me angry. And I would like to mention it, and I want a beat writer to ask them why they didn't feel that Cole Hamels was a good fit and why they felt it was appropriate to offer him so little money. I really want a beat writer to ask that, because what more damage can the beat writers do to the Phillies now? Like, the Phillies, I think, are desperately trying to make sure they don't get any more pieces written that are, you know, full of sources, because I feel like they got really angry about that last year. But I like, what more can the beat writers do to make the Phillies angry at them? Start hot. Talk about Cole Hamels. I want to know why they disrespected a franchise legend like this.
I mean, tough shit. I want the team to be mad at the beat writers. That means they're doing a great job.
I'm happy with it. I'm glad.
Yeah. And I know, like, part of that is maintaining a relationship with the team. But, yeah, I mean, this there's been a really good burst of Phillies beat writing. I feel like that there hasn't been, you know, we don't know everything we want to know. And I know there's been some frustration as far as the locked up nature of the Phillies communications, especially last offseason when we were waiting for Bryce Harper to sign. But the frustrating things about this franchise have in many cases, like, been covered and talked about. And the beats have done a pretty good job of finding new ways to talk about this team that we're all, you know, very familiar with. So I would prefer the team be mad at them, because I want to hear answers to questions like this, frankly. So, yeah, I agree. I think that would be. And you know what? In less than a month, the Phillies and Braves will be playing at spring training on February 28th, 1:05 p.m. in Clearwater. So maybe then, I don't know, if Cole Hamels is hanging around his new team, maybe that's the time they use to talk to him about it, to talk to the team about it. Who knows? So hopefully that is the case, because I know I think people, that kind of went out of our minds clearly, because we have forgotten that he had even signed with them. But that's one of the casualties of the baseball news cycle being dominated by one story in particular. We kind of lost sight of that. And it is frustrating when you think about it even a little bit. You're like, wow, this team could have improved and didn't.
They could have improved and welcomed back a franchise legend who is still beloved, and they didn't. And they just didn't. It would have cost them a Didi Gregorius to do it.
Yeah. They wanted Didi.
I guess they did, and that's fine. They made their choice, but the reason they had to make a choice is because they want to spare themselves just a couple million dollars to stay below, you know, to stay below the luxury tax, so they don't have to pay the penalty, which it, for a first-time team who is going to go over the luxury tax by just a little, because it wouldn't have been very much, the penalty would have been a couple $1 million. That's all they're trying to save. And so if that does not make you, fans who are listening, angry, I don't know what will, because you should be angry about that. I'm going to be angry about it for a long time.
Well, before we wrap up here, I just wanted to go through a list of names and just get your take on something here. So obviously the Phillies hired Joe Girardi, you know, good, great hire. I think I'm looking forward to see what effect he has on this team in an on-field capacity. But he was among a litany of new managerial hires this offseason. I wanted to, and since we were just talking about how news has been pushed aside in favor of the Astros story, that I just wanted to run through this list of new managers. And Liz, I just wanted to get your favorite hire outside of Girardi. So knowing he had been brought in Philadelphia, we'll put him aside. And I'm just going to run through this list and see if you, A, you remember that any of these happened, and B, which one's your favorite. So obviously we got Dusty Baker in Houston, Carlos Beltran in New York, who has now become Luis Rojas without managing a single game. New York being, of course, Flushing, being the Mets, which this is a very Mets thing to have happened. Joe Maddon has not managed a game for the Angels yet. Don't forget, that is new.
That's it. I remembered, I thought about Joe Maddon earlier this week, but just now I'm like, oh my God, he's the manager of the Angels now. Wow.
Yep. Derek Shelton in Pittsburgh, replacing Clint Hurdle.
I think I wrote the newser for that on Yahoo, and I couldn't have told you what his name was.
David Ross taking Joe Madden's job in Chicago. That that seemed like a fan vote decided that decision. Not that he'll be bad necessarily, but that's one of those moves that just seems like, you know, with Derek Sheldon, as anonymous as he is to us, David Ross has to be, for Cubs fans, you know, an exciting hire,
I
guess.
Oh, I forgot about that entirely. I forgot that David Ross had been hired by the Cubs. That's he was headed towards that job from the moment he retired, so.
Your boy Gabe Kapler in San Francisco.
Oh, fuck that.
Mike Matheny in Kansas City.
Of course.
And my favorite, Jace Tingler in San Diego.
Again, I wrote the newser for that and could not have told you his name.
I'm just into the name. That's the only
reason.
Yeah, that
was
I'm
the most fun part about writing that.
He's got a 3-year deal in San Diego. So I think they're hoping if they get over the top, he's going to be the manager that gets them there. But I was like, Jace Tingler. Sounds like a George Lucas developed Star Wars. And George Lucas, infamously bad at naming characters. He's the one who was always pitching it. This guy's name is Fighter Starman.
There's
or
a dude
whatever.
In Attack of the Clones named Alon Sleezbaganow. I'm not a Star Wars person, but that's just a fact I know.
Nerd.
His name is Alon Sleezbaganow.
Well, that's that's what we're looking at as far as managers this year. And I said let's not include him, but I gotta say I feel like Joe Girardi's the best hire.
I really do. I mean, who the hell are those other guys, and who cares?
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Liz, that'll about do it for this episode of Continued Success. We'll be back next week talking a little baseball. Liz, you'll be thrilled to learn that in honor of the 100th anniversary of the 19th Amendment, Philadelphia is changing its nickname to the City of Sisterly Love. Your thoughts?
Oh, God.
That's from 6ABC.
Don't help
News.
Women. Just don't. Don't. Thank you. Thank you.
Did you say don't help women?
Yeah, I'm just saying don't try to help women like that. We don't need it.
Well, you're gonna have to because it's till the end of 2020 that this honorary nickname will be occurring.
That is so stupid.
Yay!
Oh my God, that's stupid.
Well, thanks for listening. Don't be sure to subscribe, rate, and download every podcast that's part of the Good Fight podcast family, including Hidden Season with John Stolness, The Dirty Inning with myself and Dr. Trevor Strunk, and Continued Success, you know, this podcast with me and Liz. We also have plenty of new content up on our Patreon, patreon.com/hiddenseason. There's a conversation between me and Chris Jones on our show, Absolutely Hammered. And we also have a movie review of the documentary Screwball about Tony Bosch and the steroid scandal that almost brought baseball to its knees. Liz and I review that. That is the newest post on our Patreon. A lot of fun and good stuff goes up there every month. It is well worth your $5. Thank you, and we'll talk to you next time on Continued Success.